religious emotion, stripped of corruptions and freed from its last priestly entanglements, may presently blow through life again like a great wind, bursting the doors and flinging open the shutters of the individual life, and making many things possible and easy that in these present days of exhaustion seem almost too difficult to desire. Second, if we suppose a sufficient righteousness and intelligence in men to produce presently from the tremendous lessons of history an effective will for a world peace, that is to say, an effective will for a world law under a world government, for in no other fashion is a secure world peace conceivable, in what manner may we expect things to move towards this end? That movement will certainly not go on equally in every country, nor is it likely to take at first one uniform mode of expression. Here it will find a congenial and stimulating atmosphere. Here it will find itself antagonistic to deep tradition or racial idiosyncrasy or well-organized base oppositions. In some cases, those to whom the call of the new order has come will be living in a state almost ready to serve the ends of the greater political synthesis. In others, they will have to fight like conspirators against the rule of evil laws. There's little in the political constitution of such countries as the United States or Switzerland that would impede their coalescence upon terms of frank give and take with other equally civilized confederations. Political systems involving dependent areas and subject peoples, such as the Turkish Empire was before the Great War, seem to require something in the nature of a breaking up before they can be adapted to a federal world system. Any state obsessed by traditions of an aggressive foreign policy will be difficult to assimilate into a world combination. But though here the government may be helpful and here dark and hostile, the essential task of men of goodwill in all states and countries remains the same. It's an educational task, and its very essence is to bring to the minds of all men everywhere, as a necessary basis for world cooperation, a new telling and interpretation, a common interpretation of history. Does this League of Nations, which has been created by the Covenant of 1919, contain within it the germ of any permanent federation of human effort? Will it grow into something for which, as Stalybras says, men will be ready to work wholeheartedly and, if necessary, fight? As hitherto they've been willing to fight for their country and their own people. There are few intimations of any such enthusiasm for the League at the present time. The League doesn't even seem to know how to talk to common men. It's gone into official buildings, and comparatively few people in the world understand or care what it's doing there. It may be that the League is no more than a first project of union, exemplary only in its insufficiencies and dangers, destined to be superseded by something closer and completer, as were the United States Articles of Confederation by the Federal Constitution. The League is at present a mere partial league of governments and states. It emphasizes nationality. It defers to sovereignty. What the world needs is no such League of Nations as this, nor even a mere League of Peoples, but a World League of Men. The world perishes unless sovereignty is merged and nationality subordinated. And for that, the minds of men must first be prepared by experience and knowledge and thought. The supreme task before men at the present time is political education. It may be that several partial leagues may precede any world league. The common misfortunes and urgent common needs of Europe and Asia may be more efficacious in bringing the European and Asiatic states to reason and a sort of unity than the mere intellectual and sentimental ties of the United States and Great Britain and France. A United States of the old world is a possibility to set against the possibility of an Atlantic Union. Moreover, there's much to be said for an American experiment, a Pan-American League, in which the New World European colonies would play an in-and-out part, as Luxembourg did for a time in the German Confederation. We We'll not attempt to weigh here what share may be taken in the recasting and consolidation of human affairs by the teachings and propaganda of labor internationalism, by the studies and needs of international finance, or by such boundary-destroying powers as science and art and historical teaching. All these things may exert a combined pressure in which it may never be possible to apportion the exact shares. Opposition may dissolve, antagonistic cults flatten out to a common culture almost imperceptibly. The bold idealism of today may seem mere common sense tomorrow, and the problem of a forecast is complicated by the possibilities of interludes and backwaters. History has never gone simply forward. More particularly are the years after a great war apt to be years of apparent retrocession. Men are too weary to see what has been done, what has been cleared away, and what has been made possible. Among the things that seem to move commandingly towards an adequate world control at the present time are these. First, the increasing destructiveness and intolerableness of war waged with the new powers of science. Second, the inevitable fusion of the world's economic affairs into one system, leading necessarily, it would seem, to some common control of currency and demanding safe and uninterrupted communications, and a free movement of goods and people by sea and land throughout the whole world. The satisfaction of these needs will require a world control of very considerable authority and powers of enforcement. Third, the need, because of the increasing mobility of peoples, of effectual controls of health everywhere. Fourth, the urgent need of some equalization of labor conditions and of the minimum standard of life throughout the world. This seems to carry with it as a necessary corollary the establishment of some minimum standard of education for everyone. Fifth, the impossibility of developing the enormous benefits of flying without a world control of the airways. The necessity and logic of such diverse considerations as these push the mind irresistibly, in spite of the clashes of race and tradition and the huge difficulties created by differences in language, towards the belief that a conscious struggle to establish or prevent a political world community will be the next stage in human history. The things that require that world community are permanent needs. One or other of these needs appeals to nearly everyone, and against their continuing persistence are only mortal difficulties. Great, no doubt, but mortal. Prejudices, passions, animosities, delusions about race and country, egotisms, and such like fluctuating and evanescent things, set up in men's minds by education and suggestion. None of them things that make now for the welfare and survival of the individuals who are under their sway, nor of the states and towns and associations in which they prevail. Third, the attainment of the world state may be impeded and may be opposed today by many apparently vast forces, but it has, urging it on, a much more powerful force, that of the free and growing common intelligence of mankind. Today there is in the world a small but increasing number of men, historians, archaeologists, ethnologists, economists, sociologists, psychologists, educationists, and the like, who are doing for human institutions that same task of creative analysis which the scientific men of the 17th and 18th century did for the materials and mechanism of human life. And just as these latter, almost unaware of what they were doing, made telegraphy, swift transit on sea and land, flying, and a thousand hitherto impossible things possible, so the former may be doing more than the world suspects, or than they themselves suspect, to clear up and make plain the thing to do and the way to do it in the greater and more urgent human affairs. Let's ape Roger Bacon in his prophetic mood and set down what we believe will be the broad fundamentals of the coming world state. First, it'll be based upon a common world religion, very much simplified and universalized and better understood. This won't be Christianity, nor Islam, nor Buddhism, nor any such specialized form of religion, but religion itself, pure and undefiled. The Eightfold Way, the Kingdom of Heaven, Brotherhood, Creative Service, and Self-Forgetfulness. Throughout the world, men's thoughts and motives will be turned by education, example, and the circle of ideas about them, from the obsession of self to the cheerful service of human knowledge, human power, and human unity. Second, and this world state will be sustained by a universal education, organized upon a scale and of a penetration and quality beyond all present experience. The whole race, and not simply classes and peoples, will be educated. Most parents will have a technical knowledge of teaching,